Paul Huttner's in the studio. We've got the climate cast coming next, but we have also got some weather that we're watching. Tom?
Carrie, there's a severe, there's actually two warnings we're watching. It's a severe thunderstorm warning now for four counties near the metro: northwestern Carver County, northern Hennepin County, northeastern McLeod County, and Wright County. All four of those are under a severe thunderstorm warning until 10:15. That's because there was a storm located earlier this hour near Hutchinson moving east, and Lake Minnetonka, Buffalo, Plymouth, and Maple Grove are among the locations that are impacted. That's one warning. That's until 10:15. Another warning is about to expire here. That's for west central Lake County and east central St. Louis County and northeastern Minnesota. That goes until 9:45. We also got word from Governor Mark Dayton's office that the governor, in other news here, and Minneapolis Mayor R.T. Rybak will make a statement at 11:30 this morning about the lockout at the Minnesota Orchestra. They'll speak outside the newly renovated Orchestra Hall. The nearly year-long lockout is approaching important deadlines by which a deal would be needed to keep famed music director Osmo Fanska from resigning. Some of the Washington Navy Yard employees returning to work this morning say it's too soon for them to even talk about Monday's shooting that killed 12 people. Others say it will take a while to get past the tragedy. The installation reopened this morning at 6. One woman said she'd rather not be here today. A Navy spokeswoman said that today's a regular day, except for Building 197. That's where the shooting occurred, and the base gym. The gym is being used as a staging area for the FBI. More coming up here on the Daily Circuit.
Hey, it's John Moe, the host of Wits. Tickets are on sale for our fall season at the Fitzgerald Theater, and you really don't want to miss out. Our shows are packed with original sketches, great music, improv comedy, interviews, and all with amazing guests like Paul F. Tompkins, Margaret Cho, Amy Mann, Maria Bamford, Yola Tango, and more. Catch your favorite artists and discover someone you've never heard of. You're going to have a great time. Tickets are at witsradio.org.
Programming supported by AIA Minnesota's 6th Annual Homes by Architects Tour, September 21st and 22nd, showcasing 23 architect design homes, demonstrating how architects can create excellence in design and livability. HomesByArchitects.org.
Coverage of K-12 education on Minnesota Public Radio is supported in part by Target, on track to give $1 billion for education by the end of 2015, because every child deserves the opportunity to reach his or her full potential.
Well, my suggestion for the rest.
I'm Carrie Miller. We've got the climate cast coming up here in just a moment. Paul Huttner's in the studio, but we wanted to give you the latest analysis on this weather system that's moving across the state. Paul, what do you know?
Well, Carrie, I've been watching these storms that blew up in southwest Minnesota this morning, and they're starting to pick up a little steam and move into the northwest metro. As Tom said, we've got those warnings in effect. Basically, that includes the northwest half of the metro until 10:15 this morning, northwest Carver, northern Hennepin, Wright, and northeast McLeod. We've had reports, Carrie, of some wind gusts anywhere from 46 miles an hour at Hutchinson to 77 miles an hour in Renville or near Renville. We've had reports of some flattened corn, some tree damage with those wind gusts. So I'm looking at the Doppler. These storms now moving to the northeast about 30 miles an hour, and they are moving into the northwest metro right now. There's a second line of storms to the southwest, southwest of Mankato, that has more of a Twin Cities line on it for the east metro. So expect the storms to continue in the northwest metro here for the next hour or so, and then gradually spread over the rest of the Twin Cities between now and lunchtime, Carrie.
Paul, I noticed, I mean, the temperature may be still fairly cool. What is it out there? Is it somewhere in the 70s? Sorry, I caught you off guard.
No, that's
there.
Fine. It is. We've been hanging in the 70s all morning. The latest reading is 74 at Twin Cities Airport.
But it's humid. It's moisture-laden air. Does that have anything to do with the way these storms are behaving?
It has everything to do with it. The dew point right now is right around 70 degrees. In fact, it is 70 at Twin Cities Airport. So that moisture is fuel for these storms, and we've got this cold front, which actually slowed down a little bit. It's cutting into this warm and humid air mass, and it's just generating these storms, which are going today. So they're going to be moving through during the next several hours. The threat for severe weather is there through at least mid-afternoon, I think, in the Twin Cities, and then through the day as we head into Wisconsin and northeast Iowa.
Good to know. We'll keep an eye on the weather through the rest of the Daily Circuit and through the day. Time for ClimateCast. It's our weekly conversation about the science of climate change with Paul. And today we had a conversation planned about climate science denialism. But we have this new report coming out of Stockholm that the Associated Press has just put on the wire this morning, saying that the scientists are struggling to explain why global warming appears to have slowed down in the past 15 years, even though greenhouse gas emissions keep rising. Now, Paul, I wanted to talk about this because this is in some ways fuel for people who say, well, it might be happening, but you can't believe a lot of the science because look at some information like that.
Right. And that's exactly what it is. It's fuel, but it's little more than that, really, because here a couple of key data points here. One, 1998, which a lot of people really cite as the beginning of this extreme warming that we've had over the last 15 years or so, was the hottest year in 1,000 years globally. So if we have plateaued, and we've had hotter years since then, the top 10 hottest years have all occurred since then, we've plateaued at the highest, warmest level in 1,000 years. It appears to be a temporary plateau, and it appears to be because we've had more of these La Nina episodes overall, which tend to put a little bit of a damper on some of the warming. In spite of a low solar cycle, when you would expect things to cool as well, we've still seen some of the hottest years on record. So if anything, we've plateaued at one of the hottest levels in 1,000 years globally. And I think what the folks with IPCC are doing is they're trying to fend off any potential criticism. Nobody has ever said that climate change is going to increase every year all the time. But the trends that we're seeing are still fully in place. And the reason they think, if anything, that the atmosphere isn't warming as quickly as it was, say, 10 or 12 years ago, is because a lot of this heat is going into the oceans. The oceans act as a sink. They can absorb some of this warmth. The oceans are getting warmer. That may temporarily put a damper on the atmospheric warming, but once the oceans lose that capacity to absorb the heat, the atmosphere could take off.
And of course, that's creating problems too, Paul. Let's bring our friend John Abraham in here from the University of St. Thomas. Hi, John. Good to talk to you again.
Well, thanks for having me on, and I love being described as a friend. I feel like being a regular here is it brings me back to some old friends. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Tell me what you make of this AP report.
Well, you guys hit it right on the head, especially Paul in your description. And I'll just make a clarification. Scientists are not struggling to understand what's going on. We're struggling to explain what's going on. Climate science and the Earth system is very, very complicated. And we get shifts of energy all over the climate, and there are these chaotic movements of heat and fluids. And that's really complicated. So how do you explain that in a way that's easily digestible to people when you're in a policy-rich playing field? So Paul's description was really right on.
Go ahead, John.
We are, since 1998, the temperatures on part of the planet in the lower atmosphere have not warmed as much as maybe they had been predicted to warm. But that's because 1998 was picked as a starting year. If from 1970 to 1998, the temperatures warmed at about twice the rate. From 1998 to now, they've warmed less than the expected rate. And so when you look at the long-term average, the climate predictions were pretty much right on.
One of the things, John, that the AP story says is that among the countries that are gathering ahead of this IPCC report, Germany called for the reference to the slowdown to be taken out because they were concerned that it was going to be misinterpreted and it would overshadow the information, important information about climate change that's going to come out in this report.
Yeah, so that's right. We have to, first of all, separate two items. One is temperature rises and heating. The Earth is continuing to heat. In fact, I had a paper that was just published about a month ago that went back to the 1700s, and we looked at how the Earth takes up energy. Currently, we're taking up the energy at a rate of 4 Hiroshima bombs per second. That's how much thermal energy is being added to the system. Now, that energy sometimes goes into the ocean. It sometimes goes into the atmosphere. It gets spread around. That heating is continuing. There's been no pause, no slowdown, nothing. It's continuous. Now, what people are talking about with respect to this pause is temperatures in a very small thermal reservoir in the lower atmosphere. And they're finding that those fluctuate a lot, and they do. And so by looking at just part of the puzzle, it's sort of like if I go outside and I measure the temperature in January 10th, and then I measure the temperature in my yard January 17th, and let's say the temperature goes down, I would be incorrect to assume that that trend would continue and I wouldn't have any summer. They're confusing short-term fluctuations in one temperature measurement for the long-term heating, and it's very clear, Germany is right, it's very clear, the warming has continued.
Paul, one of the things that we were going to talk about and still should hear is this idea of climate science denialism. And one of John's cohorts, Dana Nucitelli, he and Dana wrote about this in The Guardian. I'm going to get into more detail about that. But the frustrating part of this is if you are not fully informed, if you're not listening to the ClimateCast week after week, if you're not fully, if you're not reading a lot about this and you're misinformed with no intention to just ignore the science, but you're misinformed.
Right.
Information like this might cast doubt because it's probably going to be politicized.
Well, and people will cherry pick small pieces of data and try to use them to refute a long running trend that has robust, if not even inassailable, science behind it, climate science behind it. You know, I talk to a lot of people, of course, you can imagine, Carrie, I'm out in the world every day and I have friends from all walks of life, people that I associate with. The vast majority of people that I talk to who are skeptical about climate change are smart, intelligent, bright people who just have not really dug into the science as much and have listened maybe to some sources that tend to have a predisposed view that climate change isn't happening, or it's a denialist view. And once you really start talking to them about it and pointing out some of the science, they agree and they know that it's happening and they move on to other stages. Now, John's the guy to talk to about what these stages of denial are because he wrote this great article that you pointed out in the Guardian. But it's remarkable how much public opinion has shifted to more and more people coming to accept the reality of climate change and that humans are playing a role.
John, we got your buddy Dana on the line yesterday to talk about these five stages, basically, of denialism. And here's one of the things he had to say about it.
Well, my suggestion for the rest of us, other than the deniers, is to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions before it becomes too late. Put a price on carbon emissions would be the most important step we can take to reduce emissions, because that way people can make informed decisions about the cost of the greenhouse gas emissions they're emitting. And for deniers, I mean, it's more right now, more of the problem is that the deniers are getting so much attention in the press that it's resulting in misinforming the public. The contrarian to the deniers, they're a pretty small segment of the population. So if you actually talk to people who are just unaware of the problem and just aren't informed about it, In that situation, it's much easier to convince them that it's a problem that we need to do something about.
And John, one of the things he was specifically referencing there was stage five, which is it's too late.
Yeah.
Why bother?
Yeah, so just very briefly, Dana mentioned these five stages. The stage one is it's not happening. Stage two is, well, it's happening, but it's not us. Stage three is, well, we don't think it'll be a problem. Stage four, we can't solve it. And then stage five, it's too late. And the way to get through that denial, that's very strong emotional denial, is to talk about ideologies that you may share with the person in the stages of denial, or to give them information from groups that they trust. So, for example, it would surprise people to know that the Department of Defense takes climate change extraordinarily seriously. They are one of the largest allies in tackling this problem. Hunters and fishermen, people of faith, farmers who can suffer from climate change, all of these people have shared interests in solving this problem. And when when it's not just a professor at the University of St. Thomas talking about it, but it's the farmer down the road or the general in Washington, they hear all of these voices that are mutually reinforcing each other, and that can help break through the denial. Now, the last one, it's too late. It's never too late. Economists have shown that it is always cheaper to do something about it than to do nothing about it. But the longer we delay, the more expensive it will be.
John, good to have you with us. Thanks so much for the late ad, the last-minute call.
Thanks,
Paul,
John.
I just want to mention that we've got a new thunderstorm warning here for Anoka, Isandy, and Sherburne counties until 10:45. In addition to the warnings that you noted a little earlier. Anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, gust front now moving into the western metro. This wind gust probably between 45 and 60 miles an hour, favoring the northwest half of the metro over the next hour and then overspreading the Twin Cities through lunchtime.
That's your latest weather. It's also the climate cast for the week. And, Paul, I'll see you next week. Good
Thanks,
to have
Carrie.
You here.
You too.
Daily Circuit continues on Minnesota Public Radio News.
Coverage of K-12 education on Minnesota Public Radio is supported in part by Target, on track to give $1 billion for education by the end of 2015, because every child deserves the opportunity to reach his or her full potential.